Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
It's In This League with Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh.
On the radio.
30. I'm on right now. I don't believe you.
You boys are live.
What's up, friendos? Hour 2 in this league right here on Sports Grid. Thank you guys, as always, for tuning in, whether it's on the radio or the podcast. Either way, make sure you are subscribed to this show and get subscribed to all the other shows we got going on. We got football that's dropping next week. Bogman and I talking about the dynasty ranks that he just released over on our Patreon, which you can check out at inthisleague.com. Sign up today, beginning of May, literally no better time. We got a whole bunch of other shows, giveaways over on Prospect One. Baseball is a lot of theoretical stuff, Bogman, being thrown around about the minor league season being canceled. Actually, an interesting listen was there's this rumor going around by this guy, Joe Doyle, who doesn't have a big following. So I think people put a lot in question, but he's got attributes to Baseball America and Prospects Live. And he was reporting from sources, which were agents, that the minor league season is canceled, which then, like, J.J. Cooper and some people in baseball and MILB issued a statement saying this is false. But I had on Ralph Lifshitz from Prospects Live while this was happening, and he knows Joe, and we kind of talked about that. And we've been over on there, we've been talking about the idea of, you know, what baseball will look like if there's no minor league season, which, you know, that's going to be hard for a lot of people to stomach.
Yeah, aren't they going to have it's not going to be minor league seasons, but they'll have instructional stuff the complexes.
Been what I so. Joe says, you know, in his tweet, which is 2 days ago, he's like, the minor league season is going to be canceled and they're going to do developmental work and they'll have developmental games. 2 weeks ago, two and a half to three weeks ago, not to tout myself too much, but I had this conversation with James Anderson from RotoWire on my show where we were starting to get the whole, like, you know, looks like baseball minor league season is not going to happen. So we had a long talk about it. And this is what I speculated on. I said, they'll have a minor league season, but it'll be at the complex level. It'll be treated just like what they do in spring training. At the end
of
spring,
it'll be work for them, but it won't be like televised and stats.
No,
they
could do something if they wanted to, but every team at the end of, like, March, they have a minor league spring training. And what that is these guys come in, they do morning workouts, and they play games every single day. So a team has all of their prospects in one place. And they have AAA, AA, low A, and high A all going. Two of them travel to another team and two of them stay. And they do this all in Arizona. And they functionally work it really well. So there's no reason that they won't do the exact same thing here for a, quote, minor league season. So that's what I think they'll do. They'll do a developmental run for a minor league season. But it's going to be built around, or it is being built around, them saying, well, the minor league season's canceled. Well, they're not going to go play. They're not going to go play in, you know, Hillsborough or whatever the hell they play. They're going to play at complexes. They'll play a few guys, and they probably won't move a whole bunch. You know, you're not going to have guys moving up divisions because they're all going to be in one spot, but they'll still be getting work in. And that was kind of
The players will still get work in, but it sucks for the local communities that don't get, you know, that stuff. Because I'm guessing the Hillsborough Hops is probably one of, like, seven things to do in Hillsborough. You know what I mean?
100%. There's a lot of lost money on the table for the minor league teams that are going to lose that. But, you know, it's getting wrapped up. Like, James, I talked about this a little bit in that, like, that little break YouTube thing I did on our YouTube, which is youtube.com/inthisleague. But, like, while all that stuff was going on with Joe and, you know, J.J. Cooper and MLB, MILB and everyone, like, James texts me and he was just like, LOL. He's like, we talked about this weeks ago. And I'm like, I know. Like, it's amazing that people are doing all this. And he's like, it's maybe one of the biggest non-stories. And maybe it's from us because, like, we see what the obvious path is going to be. And we were both just kind of like, this is just such a non-story that people are running with because it's blatantly obvious. Now, there's another one a little bit even more closer to your world, is apparently the NFL has been putting into some considerations if there's no college football season, and they would potentially look to monopolize, where the New York Post Andrew Merchant reports that the NFL is considering scheduling more Saturday games if the NCAA college football season is postponed. And the reason that that's sketchy is because A lot of schools have been canceled for the entire year. That's a really hard place to manage people. I do think there's some major questions in for the college football season, but I don't know how much I had thought about there being no NCAA football this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough, you know, it's a tough spot right now because basically to get the student athletes, because they don't pay them, to play football, they have to first open the campuses back up. And that's kind of been the sticking point to a lot of these colleges. But also, they're losing money hand over fist by not having the campus open. So
but the problem
is everything they possibly can.
Everybody has
open.
To be on board, though. And that's where I do think there actually is some validity to this not happening, because there's lots of places that want to open up schools. There's places that there's been places that have talked about not having a school year and stuff. But the problem with what you're saying is everybody has got to be on board. But what happens
They don't. No, they don't. Not everyone has to be on board.
Okay, what about the California schools? What about the Pac-12? What if UCLA,
what about them?
Stanford?
Don't play them.
So you think college football will just be like, all right, well, you know, California, you don't want to play.
I guarantee you that if Alabama can play games, but Cal can't, Alabama doesn't give a crap about Cal. And they're not connected together.
Well,
like
I agree
the
with that,
is.
But I'm saying the NCAA. Alabama will be like, yeah, screw everybody else. We're going to play. But what does the NCAA do if you have a quarter of the teams that cannot host games and can't do this?
You see if they can move locations or just play without people in the crowd, which I think California will eventually give up on. Like, you know, you can still play the games without a crowd. Half of the college football teams do it anyway. So, you know, if you watch a Middle Tennessee State game in the middle of the season when they're playing a lower level school, no one's at that game. You know what I mean? So I think they can do empty stadium. That's fine. I just think that they can adjust their schedules, even if a school says, well, we're not doing it and that's it. We're canceling all our games. The NCAA will work it with whatever they have. You know, whoever goes and plays, they'll get a schedule to go on Saturday. And I don't think it's an official rule, but it's kind of one of those things where, you know, the NCAA and the NFL work together. So if there is no season, which, you know, I think you have to put that in the possibility basket, right? You just have to say, but in my mind, I just can't imagine all of these schools losing so much money.
I agree with
you. Some schools are, but they've been talking about in college football in particular that some programs might just flat out fold if they don't play this year.
Well, see, that's
kind
of but okay,
paycheck to paycheck.
That's what I wanted to talk with. Like, ultimately, I think college football can exist in some way because, you know, at worst, they can do the no people in stands type of thing. And that's out there. But like, I think it is way more dicey because if the teams are tied that heavily to the schools being open, there's a lot that's out of everybody's hands. I mean, you know, the administrators are going to be put in a difficult situation. And all I'm saying here is I think the NCAA has got a really, really big problem on their hand, because what's going to happen and how much of a push are you going to get if the NCAA just says, hey, you know what, screw it, you don't want to play, that's fine, we'll work around you. Well, that can be absolutely devastating to colleges that are trying to do this from a public health standpoint, because people are going to decommit. People will if Cal and Stanford and UCLA and everything like that, if California doesn't allow it, the governor steps in and they cannot play these games in California. And NCAA says, well, we don't care, we're still going on. You're going to have a civil war within the NCAA because the colleges that can't because of state laws, if that's still enacted, they're going to lose recruits left and right, and it would be a disaster.
Oh, it's a mess.
They have to be on board. They all have to. I don't think you can have a couple schools just be like, "No, we're not going to do it."
Yes, you
I think
can,
everybody
though.
Has to be on board.
Other schools, it's never going to work like that. It's like it would be like saying, "Well, all the games in Florida are going to get wiped out for this hurricane, so let's just not play this weekend." That's kind of the situation that you're getting.
But
to.
It's not one as weekend; it's a season.
I understand, but it's as far as the bottom line goes, like. You know, I think that the big schools can survive, but can, you know, Troy football survive a season without getting paid?
Yeah, no, I don't think they can. But I don't think I don't think Cal can survive if California.
But Cal can also do, like, they have enough time right now to either A, lobby to to say, hey, you know, you need to open the state back up because we have to have students in our schools. We have to get the football program rolling. So they can do that, A, or B, they can figure something out to where, all right, we're going to play in Nevada for a year and we're going to have remote campus there for the football
now,
players.
Okay, but you know, could they get an exempt? Because you're saying the games are tied to the campus being open. If the campus doesn't open, can they get, do you think they can get a ruling where they can just still go play the games?
1,000%. The okay, NCAA see, and that, will grant waivers immediately.
But see, that's
that
the cure I'm talking about. Then see, yeah, that, because yeah. I do not think, and this is why I think, you know, football might, the NFL might have a little upper hand on this. I do not think the NCAA can move forward unless every one of their teams that is under the Division I umbrella is taken care of in some capacity where they can play. I do not think that they can move forward by even being like, well, you 15 guys, you don't want to play. Okay, cool. We're not going to do it without you, because it will be an absolutely devastating blow. I think they all have to be on board. So that waiver would cure that. If California says, hey, sorry, we're just not opening up the schools, so you guys can go F yourselves. If they can get a waiver where the games can still happen and academically the NCAA approves it and the games can go on with no people in stands and no people in the campuses, well, that's a completely different story. And that's the only way I can see it works if the campuses aren't open.
I understand what you're saying with everyone having to be on board, but it's just there's 130 FBS level teams. Like, I don't even know what's going to happen in Division II, Division III, FCS, all that stuff, the smaller schools. Who knows? And to be honest, I don't really care. You know, I want to see the big boys play. And if the Pac-12 specifically, because so many teams are in, if the Pac-12 specifically doesn't want to play because a lot of the teams are in California and, you know, obviously Washington and Washington State and Oregon, where there's been more breakouts than others, I think that the NCAA will say, okay, Big 12, don't play this year. Or if, you know, Arizona State and Arizona want to play, then for a year we'll allow you to become an independent,
but
make your own schedule.
All of those
it's going to be difficult.
Those schools would lose all of their players. Why would any guy just sit out this entire year, hurt their draft stock, hurt it be a year? I mean, every single player would transfer.
They would miss the year anyway. Because you can go into the transfer portal, but you have to be a graduate to get your transfer approved.
The NCAA would waive that 100%. If they're in this situation where they're going to tell places, well, it doesn't matter, we're playing, so you can play or not, and then teams are going to bow out, NCAA would 100% have an in-season transfer waiver. It would destroy teams.
When it comes down to, okay, we're going to wreck the Pac-12 for like 3 or 4 years because their big stars are all going to transfer, where no one gets paid this year, they're going to say, all right, tough news, Big 12, you know, the rest are Pac-12, the rest of us are getting paid. So
I mean, I agree.
There's just too much money to be left on the table to, if there's 12 teams that don't want to play out of 130, well, then screw them. You know,
I agree there's way too much money on the table, and that's why they're probably working feverishly to go through this process. I just don't agree that they are going to set ultimatums to the big stuff. I do think one thing that's coming out of this pandemic we're going to see in sports is a realization of the top dog mentality of, like, people just want the best of the best. There's maybe been a glut of extra weight, and like MLB is, they're obviously putting that in our faces right now with minor league baseball, where they're saying, well, we're cutting 40 teams, and people are like, whoa, 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 whoa. But it's like, all right, well, you guys have 7 different developmental leagues. Do you guys need that process?
Right.
And there's some people in baseball, there are some people that are actually very happy about this, because this could speed up the process. This could hone it in a little bit better. There's money to be saved. So, you know, just get me the stuff that I want and get it to me quicker.
Kind of,
the same thing can be happening with, that's what I'm saying, with college football, is like, they can cut the weight and just give me what I want. But it, to me, it does not work unless there is a 100% solution where the Pac-12 teams play. You just can't. The Pac-12 will be destroyed, and it will be destroyed for a long time if NCAA just said, yeah, you can't do it.
Well, it won't be destroyed for a long time. I'm going to disagree with you there, because kids want to play at USC. Kids want to play at Cal. They want to play at UCLA. So it'll hurt them for this year and maybe the next couple of years because of recruiting and stuff like that. But, I mean, what is the draw to USC? It's not, you know, the tradition of the football team is great, and, you know, whoever is head coaching there right now, it's Helton, it is fine, but it's the weather and the women. that draw
maybe the, but the, you know what, if there's also a precedent that
maybe that's for sure
okay I yeah mean, sure no that you're right about that, but there's also a precedent in California right now that this coronavirus and different versions and iterations of it, it's going to come back in the winter. They could keep coming back. If California is going to shut down every time, students and their parents are going to look and they're going to say, well, you know, USC, they didn't
send my kid there. You're right.
Yeah. Why would I send my kid there? What do the coaches do if they lose games and they don't have recruits, and then you're going to start losing jobs and coaches might be, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I you're being a realist on this. I'm being more of an extremist on it, but if they were to allow an entire division, a big one like a Pac-12, let's say, to not be in, I think it would be a destruction that would take way, way beyond 5 years.
And I think they're figuring that stuff out now. Like the hope is all schools open, you know, get the kids back on campus. That way you can have the football team there. But I don't know if that's going to work for every single school. So I think remote campuses could work. I think that's something that they're going to be working on this second right now, as we're talking about this, for when the season starts in late August, you know, and camps open up and all that stuff, because they already canceled all of the college sports through what, June, you know?
I mean, I don't know. The baseball season's complete. The Cape Cod right. League, I mean, everything has
been canceled. The Little League World Series that has been playing since 1947.
Yeah. I mean, so, baseball for 2020 is in a rough spot. Football, right. I just think, is in a dicey spot. I don't think
the NFL just doesn't care. They're just like, nope, we're going.
Well,
we're
but good. They, but also they're not set to a lot of other restrictions. They have, you know, they've got their stadiums. They can play without people.
Yeah.
They've got huge, huge TV deals. These players are, you know, they're getting money. They can use the likenesses of their players. The NCAA is in a different spot. Like, they can't just
32 teams for the NFL.
Stanford,
right?
Yeah, Stanford can't just go to Vegas. They just can't go to Las Vegas, because how are you going to send 80 kids who are there for college? Like, they're not making money. They can't just go and transfer and live in another state when that's not their job. You know, it's just, you can't do that. They have to be there. They have to play. They have to be given exemptions. If the campus isn't open, they have to be given exemptions to play in the stadium with or without people. And that is literally the only way I can see that NCAA could do this. Or, you know what, Bugs? Football will be monopolizing on Saturday, but it'll be the NFL.
Yeah, and that's what they already do. Like, as soon as the college season ends, the NFL puts games on Saturday. So that's they don't do it for that crossover reason. So if there is no college football, which I don't see, but it has to be in the realm of possibility, there would be a split schedule, which would a lot of people would hate.
It would be.
A lot of people would hate that.
I mean, hey, guarantee you're going to get football on Saturdays this winter. It just... You know, we don't know exactly what it's going to be. Yeah, it's dicey. It's really interesting. We haven't had a lot of this college football conversation. But when we come back, we'll talk about where the college guys are going after. That's the NFL draft. We're recapping the final NFC team. So don't go anywhere. We're in this league right around the corner.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice, we play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old...
In this league.
Talk about www.com, you made you go click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
I don't know what you're saying, but that's what's going on, yeah.
More in this league right here. It is Bogman, it is Welsh, and we are finally going to get back to these reviews of the teams in the NFC and as far as how they are grading out for the NFL draft. This is post-NFL draft stuff. How did they do? Everybody's got a draft grade, and we're going to continue looking at this GPA thing. It's a really cool piece, and hopefully this Renee Bugner has gotten enough credit for it, because I just like what they did. We always like aggregated lists, and this was a really good one. So we are going to cite the GPA. We're going to take a look at the win totals, the over-unders, at least, as far as the sports books are saying, and we'll see what these teams are all about. And Bogman, we are going to jump in to the NFC North with the Chicago Bears. Chicago Bears, they had some primary needs, according to the Draft Network, on offensive line, corner, and really the secondary, cornerback and safety you could put in there. a bunch of secondaries. Edge rusher is literally a secondary need for every single team, even though they did drop $70 million on Robert Quinn in free agency. Quarterback's a secondary need, but they acquired Nick Foles. They even got Jimmy Graham in the offseason. So they had no first-round pick, two second-round picks, and they spent a tight end as their very first pick, and then a cornerback. It was Cole Kmet. I wasn't sure if it was silent or not. Cole Kmet from Notre Dame, and then Jalen Johnson, quarterback out of Utah, were the first two picks. So what do you think about the Bears?
I thought they did a pretty solid job for the picks they had. Of course, not having their first-round pick is still from the Khalil Mack trade. So this is the last year of it, though. So they have their first round pick next year. I'm 99% sure. But they also, you know, one of their needs was a safety. They signed Gibson today, and they also drafted Travis Gibson. I can't remember from Tulsa. And, you know, they needed a lot of help. Jalen Johnson. I mean, almost every part of that Utah defense got drafted. But Cole Kmet was interesting and not. I wouldn't have spent a top 50 pick on him, and he was 43 for them. So that was a little surprising when it happened, but they cut Trey Burton. They brought in another tight end, Matt Nagy, and they signed Jimmy Graham, you know, obviously. But Matt Nagy knows, like, he has a plan for the guys that he brings in. Sometimes it works, you know, and sometimes they're Mitchell Trubisky. So
just because everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face, according to our great philosopher, Mike Tyson. That's great that he has a plan. I think the bigger question is how much can Nagy actually implement the plan?
And how long is he going to be there? You know, that's the real, because if they don't play well this year, I don't know how much longer Matt Nagy's going to stick around in Chicago.
Well, look, dude, they brought in, I mean, they didn't just bring in some dude as another quarterback to Trubisky. They brought in a guy that they could give the reins to for the rest of the season. And there were draft rumors and stuff like that. I mean, you know, the coach is in hot water when the quarterback's in hot water. This team is a little bit all over the board. You know, David Montgomery quite worked out. It might have been a Nagy situation more than anything, a play calling scheme that they couldn't get the most out of it. They're an odd team. And as far as the draft rating goes, they were kind of at the bottom of the list. It looks
25th.
Like, yeah, I was about to say it's like probably by bottom third or something like that. A 2-4-8. Yeah, Todd wasn't to do that, but bottom third half. a 2-4-8 was their GPA. They were given a couple B's, lot of C's, and actually no D's. So just C's and B's. They were us in high school.
It's tough to grade out high when you don't have a first round pick, though. So, you know.
Yeah, I suppose. But you have 2 second round picks in this draft. I mean, I think a lot of people could do some serious stuff if you had two relatively good. What were they? Two top 50 picks. They had two top 50 picks, 43 and 50. I mean, there's some damn good players out there. It just, I think the way that they went as far as investing, like the Cole Kmet one, just, I don't know, it was odd. Get rid of Trey Burton and bring in him. I don't know.
Well, it's good news because there is a team that drafted worse than them in this division. It's not the team we're going to right now, but they weren't as bad as the Packers. That's for sure.
Well, yeah, and they were the absolute worst. Let me just pull up here so we can look over on the sports book. That was the other
I'm
thing
not
that's
look.
Been fun.
Can I guess the win total?
Absolutely.
For the Bears?
Yeah, I was just pulling it up here. Okay, so I've got it here, but we've got the sports book on DraftKings up, and we're looking at the team futures, and we're on win totals here. So you can go
five.
In. Okay, you can go in here, and you can look at championship, conference winners, division winners to make the playoffs. Those are all bets you can do. We're playing the win totals here, and you're saying 5 wins for the Bears, or you think that's
5
the line?
I that's what I would put the line at.
Then you are going to smash the under because the line for them is at 7.5.
What?
-110 both ways, Boggs.
I guess, you know, since they finished last in the division last year, at least I think they did. No, maybe the Lions did. I'll have to double check. But they should have an easier schedule, but you still got to play Green Bay twice. It doesn't matter if they had a good draft or not. They're still a good team. And Minnesota is a really good team. So I'm kind of surprised that they set it at 7. That's just insanely high to me. The Bears won. They were 8-8 last year. The Lions were 3-12. So I don't know. Maybe the roster is a little bit better than I'm giving them credit for. But I can't see 7 games.
I like the idea. Don't look and don't pull up the sports book because let's have you guess on the rest of these teams here because, you know, I mean, You go back and look at the roster, that's fine, but is there any more confidence when you hear it's 2.5 games above what your win, what your line is? I mean, is that something you'd want to smash that under? It's the same line, yeah, minus 110.
I'm taking the under on that for sure. I don't know that Foles is much better than Trubisky. I still do, and people are going to roll their eyes. I believe Trubisky can be successful in the NFL, but I think it's going to be, you know, the same path that Ryan Tannehill went down, where he had to go to Tennessee and then get good. So,
yeah. Over to the Detroit Lions, who made a couple tiny moves. They got Chase Daniel and Geronimo Allison on offense. Tons and tons of moves on the defensive side, whether it's defensive line, linebacker, a lot of, I think, 5 different secondary moves from Desmond Trufant to Miles Killebrew. As far as primary need, though, it was still corner, even though, I mean, I'm literally looking here. They have,
it's terrible.
They have 5 guys that they brought into this lineup, 5 in the secondary, 2 linebackers, 2 defensive linemen. But the primary need was still cornerback and line, whether it's interior or edge rushers. This was pretty heavy on the defense outside of corner. And the Detroit Lions had the 3rd overall pick. They didn't move out of it. And I'll tell you, I thought they had a, at least on the front end of the draft, the first 3 picks, I absolutely loved. It kind of fell off for me there a little bit after. But they got Jeff Okuda from Ohio State with the 3rd overall pick, monster corner. They got DeAndre Swift, running back out of Georgia, who is an absolute freaking steal, to add another offensive weapon. And Julio Okwara, Julian Okwara from Notre Dame, which I thought he was playing a little bit more linebacker. They have him as an edge rusher on here. Maybe you have him as an edge rusher, but Okwara is kind of a beast. And
Brother is on the team too, Romeo.
Yeah, Okwara. That's it. Yeah, they made a big deal about that. They got a couple other defensive linemen late in the draft. They got a wide receiver. It felt like they had a really good draft, and they drafted at a bunch of needs. But what do you think? And then I'll go through the grades.
I thought they did a fantastic job. I know their grade is kind of middling here, but I like Jeff Okuda. I think they should have moved back to get a little bit more, and they could still take Okuda. They should have just lowered their asking price to move back from 3. DeAndre Swift I like because I'm not a believer in Kerryon Johnson staying healthy. He just hasn't done it. He's been a little stiff too, running upright and stuff. But I like a lot of these. Jonah Jackson I thought was a great pick for them to help on the offensive line. So was Logan Stenberg. I mean, these are guys that grade out very, very good in their respective conferences. So I thought those were great picks. And I'm a huge Quintez Cephas fan. I know that he didn't have a great combine. He ran real slow and stuff like that. But Jeff Okuda said the toughest wide receiver I covered in college was Quintez Cephas from Wisconsin. So get him a better quarterback than what they've had at Wisconsin, and he could be a stud at some point here. So I really like what the Lions did.
They were given a 3.15, a 3.15 GPA, a bunch of A's, and then it kind of tallied off, and then Thor kind of killed them, to be honest with you, with their overall grade, because you had one B minus, then you just had B's, B pluses, and A's, and then Thor comes in here, Thor Nystrom from Roto World, with a D. Absolutely hated it, God. Apparently, which I don't understand. If you get Okuda and DeAndre Swift, I'm not sure.
He must have wanted a quarterback.
Well, it must have been something about the depth. Like, they didn't fill a need that he thought they should have gone with, which I'm not 100% sure. Maybe O-line. Maybe he felt they should have gone offensive lineman. But I'm not sure why. It would have been interesting to read. But not a super, super positive rating, though. I'm in agreement across the board with some of these other guys. I mean, there's like 3 straight A's. PFF gave him a straight up A. You've got the Draft Wire and Monday Morning Quarterback all with A's, so that's a little bit.
Yeah, I would have given him like an A- if I was grading. I mean, I don't do grades, but I would have given him like an A-. I would definitely not have given them a D.
What do you think is the win? What do you think the line looks like for them?
I'm gonna say 6 because they only won 3 games last year, but Stafford's coming back, so I'm gonna put it at like 6.
-106 for over 7. And -115 under 7.
I wish it was 6, because if it was 6, I would take the over. I can't take the over 7.
So you're going to go under?
Can't do it. Yeah, I go under.
Okay. The worst graded team in the entire draft. Everybody absolutely hated it. What are they doing for agency? They brought in Christian Kirksey, linebacker. They brought in Devin Funchess as a something. He's a wide receiver, but he was a something. So
he's going to be a main target now.
Now it's not even in theory. They came in with some offensive needs. You know, they needed to get some stud wide receivers if they could around Aaron Rodgers. They spent a draft a couple years ago on 3 guys, and they're still holding on. But you figured, you know, bring in an impact guy. Tight end was another primary need. They had some defensive needs across the board, interior defensive lineman, linebacker. But the Green Bay Packers surprised many, many people. They traded up to draft Jordan Love in the first round, a quarterback. It shocked people. The next pick they had was the second 62nd overall, and they took a running back in A.J. Dillon. Aaron Jones is a free agent, but they also have Jamal Williams, so that was not a this-is-going-to-help-now situation. They did tackle tight end in the third round, and they literally didn't draft a single wide receiver in this entire thing. So there's a lot of controversy around what this was supposed to do for Aaron Rodgers, and they brought an heir apparent in, and everybody on the planet hated their draft. A 1.31 GPA. Thor gave him an F. There's some D minuses in there. The highest they got was one B minus. Everything was under B's after that. So it was top to bottom, the worst graded, not even close. The next highest was a 2.07. They had a 1.31 Boggs.
Yeah, you know, I just, I'll defend the Jordan Love pick tooth and nail, but I can't defend not taking a wide receiver in the deepest class of wide receivers we've ever seen. It just doesn't make any sense. Even going to UDFAs. They didn't sign UDFAs. They signed Daryl Stewart out of Michigan State. I believe that's the only wide receiver, at least as of yesterday, that I saw that they had signed. So just kind of surprising that they didn't add more weapons. And did you see that stat that someone tweeted out the other day, the Welsh, where it was, touchdowns thrown to first round picks? Aaron Rodgers has one.
Really?
It was Mercedes Lewis in like week 12 last year. One touchdown pass to a first round pick. Because that's just not what the Packers do. They're not doing it. Mm. So I was surprised they didn't. I mean, I like some of these picks, too. I like Garvin from Miami. I like John Runyon as a guard. And I like DeGuerra. I think they reached on him a little bit, taking him in the third. But I like some of these picks. But added up, knowing what they needed, I would put them as dead last as well.
So. Yeah. What do you think the total on the win total looks like for them?
9.
They are minus 118 at over 8.5 and minus 104 under 8.5. So
Aaron Rodgers, I'm still going over.
I'll tell you though, I feel like they're testing us. They want us to take that over though. That's a pretty little 8.5. I would be tempted to put a couple ducats down on. All right, last team here. And then in the next segment, we can talk about the NFC West. It's the final team here in the North. It is the Minnesota Vikings who, I don't think they made anything impactful as far as offense and free agency. Really, I'm not sure free agency, they did anything earth shattering. They
didn't
brought in
have to.
Yeah.
They had every pick in the draft.
Yeah. And that's very true. They brought in Michael Pierce. They signed him for a bit, but they had two first rounders. They had this 58th overall pick, the 89th overall pick. Corner, wide receiver, edge rusher, those were all primary needs. Then at this point, because the team is so stacked, it's just really a little bit of everything. Well, they were able to tackle two of those primary needs in the first round. The 72nd overall pick, they took Justin Jefferson, fell right into their lap, and they got Jeff Gladney from TCU with a trade with the 49ers at 31 overall. Then they end up, Ezra Cleveland was actually a good pick out of Boise State in the second round. Get a couple more corners later on, really, just punch that defense. KJ Osborne late in the fifth round as well, another wide receiver out of Miami. So they got a couple wideouts. They went heavy on the defense. They got an impactful offensive lineman in the second. I mean, it's no shock that the Minnesota Vikings, as you said, got a 3.92 GPA, the absolute highest grade. Only one human being, Mark Maskey, did not give them an A. Every other freaking person gave them an A. Even Thor Nystrom, A+.
Yeah, I love this class for them. I mean, Justin Jefferson is a little rough having to live up to, having to live up to Diggs because they took him with the pick they traded Diggs for, So I don't necessarily like when teams do that, but, I thought that Jefferson was going to have to go to Philly at 21. So to have him fall right in their lap, you have to take that guy. I don't care what expectations he's going to have. You got to take him. That's a great pick. Ezra Cleveland falling to the second, especially this far in the second, was very surprising. I could see any team taking him, and, the Vikings were just sitting there like, okay, well, we have 1,000 more picks after this one, so we can take whatever we want. And they took some late guys that slipped, really. I mean, Wanham, I felt, slipped a little bit to the fourth. James Lynch was huge at Baylor. Early buzz about him going the second round, fell to the fourth. Troy Dye, I just watched a lot of Pac-12 football, and Dye and Breeze from that Oregon defense, and he's a safety that'll come out next year. We're just always around the football. And when I looked at quarterbacks, Nate Stanley was the guy that I like after that, after the upper echelon guys. So I really like what the Vikings did, and I would grade them out as one of my highest classes as well. So just great spots for these guys to land.
Yeah, just a glut of riches. It's actually amazing how many of the picks they stuck to as well. What do you think the win total looks like for the Minnesota Vikings?
I'm going to go with...
Still a tough division.
Yeah, it is a tough division. I'm going to go with 9 again.
Okay, that's interesting. I thought you might even go a little bit higher. 121 is the overprice. That's the minus 121. It's plus 100 on the under, and it is set at 8.5.
8.5. Okay.
I don't know how you don't take the over.
Yeah, I think you got to take the over because I think the Vikings are deep at each position too.
Yeah,
so,
and you know,
especially coming out of this draft.
And there's some things
to
take away from this division as well. All right, don't go anywhere. When we come back, In This League continues on, and we are going to talk about the NFC West, my division. Don't go anywhere. Fogman and Welsh coming back.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Hey, In This League.
Look at us. Look at us. Huh? Who would have thought?
Not me. Not me. Not me.
Who would have thought?
Not me. Not me.
Look at us.
Look at us.
Who would have thought?
Not me. Not me.
Absolute perfect time to come and join us over on Patreon. It is May 2nd as you're listening to this, or maybe a couple days later if you, you're maybe putting it in the bank. I know people are banking some podcasts out there, and that's totally cool. It's still a perfect time, though, beginning of May. So come and join with us. Secret shows, brand new lists, football, baseball, live streams. Going to kick back up some live streams. We kind of had like a come down from this past week we just had from the week prior with all the draft stuff. And we're going to kind of kick back into everything. So just come and check us out. InThisLeague.com will take you to our Patreon. Come and sign up. Have so much fun. You can even jump in the GroupMe rooms as we prepare for NFL draft stuff, as we're preparing for basketball, talking about coming back, and all of the different rumors of baseball. Just saw John Heyman report, hey, early July is when we're talking about coming back. And it's like, all right, bud.
Well, we heard June yesterday.
Yep.
So
changes on the daily.
Yeah.
But we're preparing. Yeah. We're doing all that stuff to prepare here. But right now we're talking about, we're looking at each team and we're looking at the grades from the NFL draft and, you know, how they were able to identify their needs. And looking at this aggregated list of grades is just more helpful. Like a single grade, like, okay, great. Like, obviously, you can tell Thor Nystrom is an all-in or all-out type of guy. And Chad Ruder is a I-don't-hate-anybody guy. He literally, his lowest grade was C-plus to one team, and that was the Packers. He gave...
the Packers, like, when Ruder's giving you a C-plus, that's like a normal person giving you the middle finger.
That's 100% right. So, you know, taking one guy's word... either way can be a little bit dicey. So this is kind of a fun experiment looking at this RNBWCV, that's the Twitter handles, aggregated draft grades. And we
I don't know who it was from, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but Bleacher Report, like, people are keeping receipts on these old draft classes now.
Sure.
And somebody gave the Seahawks a D the year that they took Russell Wilson. And so people are dredging that stuff up now, too.
I always laugh about that. So, you know, it always is pretty it's pretty dang comical when people bring that stuff up and they want to just be like, you know, oh, look, like I see it in baseball all the time. Look at this draft report they said about this guy. And it's like, well, pal, I don't know what to tell you. Like,
yeah,
you know,
no one is a finished product coming into the NFL. So.
Yeah. People make mistakes.
You just never know how much the coaching staff's going to be able to shine someone up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, so. And you have to weigh, you know, the people that you follow, you just have to weigh, like, everyone's going to get stuff wrong. You just have to weigh, like, how do they approach the wrongness and how often is it, you know, is it consistent?
Right.
Is it really, really consistent? I can't go out and have a whole glut of, Nick Prado's in on my belt. I can't have that.
And
I can't.
Akram Wadley's for me. Right,
yeah, exactly.
Right.
You can have Akram Wadley's. I can't have all the Nick Prado's in the world. We have to, you know, you want to have a 2 or 3 to 1 type of ratio. And luckily,
hey,
you know,
everybody better give you Acuna and give me Christian McCaffrey. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's a multitude of guys. Julio Rodriguez and the guy I've been talking about. So it's all about weighing the system, and that's why an aggregated system is pretty dang cool here. So let's kick up. We're going to talk about the division I care most about. It is the NFC West. A lot of movement, a lot of crazy stuff, and it starts with the Arizona Cardinals, who made the biggest splash in free agency by not only putting the tag on Kenyon Drake, but they went out and acquired, of course, DeAndre Hopkins. So that was a really big move. A couple minimal-ish, they signed Devon Kennard, linebacker, a couple minimal-ish defensive moves. So they had some needs coming into this draft. Offensive line to go and protect Kyler Murray. Edge rusher was something, and linebacker still for this team. Really a lot of defensive needs. They, with Kenny Drake and Hopkins and Fitzgerald and Kyler Murray, they kind of had their weapons. They still have Christian Kirk there offensively. So it's defense and offensive line. And their first two picks, they really hit it hard. Isaiah Simmons, just an absolute, was it like a pocket knife? Super utility type of knife type of guy. He can just kind of play all over the
field. He's
going to
be a hybrid.
Yeah, hybrid. Sure. That's a better word for it. And they got Josh Jones fell to them in the third round out of Houston.
Surprising.
Yeah, that was a big surprising one. They had a couple other decent moves, but the Eno Benjamin one still sits out as an absolute shock to both of us. Like, what happened? I mean, like I watched more Eno Benjamin, and there's definitely like a LaMichael James to him for me when I was watching some tape, which could be good and bad. You know, how good he was in college and how not good he was at the NFL
guy
level.
Was a 300 carry guy. He wasn't terrible at the combine. He wasn't great, but he wasn't terrible. So I just couldn't believe he fell off to the seventh round. So them getting him in the seventh was amazing. And Evan Weaver falling to the sixth too. Like,
yeah. So I mean, do the whole thing here. Cause I agree.
Well, they took Leke Futo, the defensive tackle from Utah. We just got done talking about Utah. Rashard Lawrence was a big part of LSU's defense. They took him too. So like all of these names that they took are super recognizable. So you're going to get high grades from anybody.
That's
on
a good
this
point.
Team, I think. So,
but they also, it was a major fill of need, which, you know, not every single team actually did. Like, you know, we were talking about with the Bears, like, oh, you know, he thinks he knows what he's doing. It's like, all right, well, execution is still kind of the big key for some of these guys, but it's going to be hard to screw up Isaiah Simmons and Josh Jones. Like, those are guys you plug and play right now.
Right.
Some of these others are, they're not even meant to be like lottery tickets, but there's high upside. And, you know, Eno Benjamin, when we were in the seventh round, I was just like, I just don't see why any team would let Eno Benjamin go to free agency and pick the spot. Just take him. I don't see any harm unless there's a major character issue that's floating out there. You're right. Like, he might be, like I said, I compare to LaMichael James a little bit, which would be an oddity, but, you know, Michael James isn't a 300 carry guy. You know, Eno Benjamin, right. He's got something really interesting about him. So I thought they did really well, and I liked all the holes they were able to plug. They were given the fourth best grade, GPA of 3.75 out of this. Absolutely off the wall. So there is a really interesting nugget here that Doug Farr doesn't have a grade. It just says 4.3. So I don't know what that means. I don't know how they aggregated that. If you look at the chart, there's a couple
of bonuses.
I guess. I don't know.
4.0 is an A, right?
Maybe. Did they do extra homework? Thor gave him an A. There's really just a ton of A's. There's only three B's in there. So the Arizona Cardinals absolutely killed it in the minds of many.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, these picks are recognizable. They fill spots of need, and they already traded for Hopkins. So the Cardinals are the hotness. What's that? Oh, God. I'm going to put the win total on them, the Welsh, for, I'm going to say 7.
Nailed it. Absolutely nailed
it.
Really? Over under is 7, and it's -110, -110 both ways.
I'm going to take the under. I'll take the under on 7, but I knew that was what it was going to be because there's so much hype because they got Hopkins.
Tough division.
Yeah, it's a tough division. You got the you know, NFC champions. You got the Seahawks who were in the NFC championship game against them. I mean, it's a tough, tough division for sure.
And the Rams still have that defense. You know, their offense looks squirrely right now. With the changes that they, well, I mean, you know, they did make some changes on defense too. They made some changes across the board, but you know, I don't think you can look at the Rams and be like, well, they're done. You know, they're going to be the bottom of the division. Cause look, the Cardinals went and got DeAndre Hopkins.
Ago.
Yeah. It's not set in stone. Like This is a great number, because could the Cardinals win 9? It's possible. I think it's tougher in this division, but 7 is right in this marker of, like, I don't know if they're a 6 or an 8-win team, so this is more of a push, so that's a pretty solid one. The next team up is the Rams, who we were talking about. They didn't bring in much because they had major, major cap issues. Leonard Floyd, they got on a one-year deal. Michael Brookers, as far as defense goes, they got a couple depth signings on the offensive line. So going into the draft, linebacker, edge rusher, cornerback, interior offensive lineman. You could say there's a question of maybe they need a running back. They have Daryl Henderson after getting rid of Todd Gurley. Their needs kind of across the board outside of maybe wideout and quarterback. Everything else is probably in play. Well, they didn't have a first-round pick. They had 2 second-round picks, and they spent them both on offensive players. They got Cam Akers out of Florida State and Van Jefferson, wide receiver out of Florida. They got some other big-name defensive players in here, edge rusher Terrell Lewis from Alabama in the third round. Just some big school guys were drafted by the Rams. So what did you think here? Cam Akers and Van Jefferson, maybe a little bit different than what we thought this Rams team would do, at least based on need.
I knew they were going to go with the wideout at some point because they traded Cooks and Kupp is a free agent and they have cap problems. So it's going to be hard to re-sign. So I knew they were going to go wideout. I like Van Jefferson. I think he fits. He's a lot like Brandon Cook. So I think that fits. Cam Akers I was a little surprised by, but I think the biggest shock was they waited until the 7th round to draft an inside linebacker because they lost both their starters from last year. And now they have Kenny Young, who used to be a Raven, starting, and Troy Reader, who on PFF ranked 88 of 89 linebackers. So it's going to be, teams are going to pick them apart across the middle because they don't have good linebackers there. So I was a little surprised they waited on that. So I wouldn't give this, I like some of these players. I like Jordan Fuller specifically, the safety out of Ohio State, who they took in the 6th. But I don't know about this class, man. This one weirded me out a little bit. So I they should have been, I'm not looking at it, but they should have been low.
Yeah, they're grades. In like the, you know, it's in the lower half.
Middle-ish.
Yeah, it's probably like 20 or like a 19 or something like that. They were given a 2.8 GPA, couple A's, a decent amount of B's, and some C's. So it's just kind of all across the board. There wasn't a really great consensus. Chad Ruder, of course, gave them an A, and Annie Benoit from the Monday Morning Quarterback gave an A. Lowest grade, no shocker, Thor Nystrom, C-. So Rams, that's an interesting one. Now, win totals, what do you think?
For the Rams, they're popular. They're going in the new, I'll say 8.
Minus 110 both ways. Nailed it. 8.
Eight.
You are, you know, your NFC eight. West, apparently. 8 is the over under, minus 10 both ways. So which side are you going to take?
I'll take the under. I don't think they got enough on defense, not enough experience.
We said that about the Arizona Cardinals, but I also think like this is a team that could be worse in the division. Like the Cardinals could
Cardinals
win 6.
Need to gel. Cardinals need to gel. Rams need players.
Yeah, I feel like the Cardinals could win 6 and the Rams could win 4. That's where this could go. My San Francisco 49ers. Now, offense, really, they didn't make any defensive moves besides re-signing players. They got rid of Buckner, which was a little bit of a bummer. They did bring a one-year deal in on Travis Benjamin. They really lost guys, Emmanuel Sanders, Buckner. So you could say that the 49ers just needed to fill the needs of the players they lost, which was wide receiver, defensive lineman. There's a question of a linebacker and, as we learn, offensive line with the loss of Joe Staley, which they did with the Trent Williams trade. So the 49ers had 2 picks. They traded back 1 spot, did not take Jerry Jeudy like I wanted them to, and they took Javon Kinlaw, big monster defensive tackle, interior defensive lineman, to replace Buckner. They had the 31st overall pick that they traded up with the Minnesota Vikings to 25 to take Brandon Ayuk, wide receiver out of ASU, to replace Emmanuel Sanders. So boom, boom, immediate replacements. They got their offensive tackle. They got another tight end, another wide receiver. And then, like I said, Joe Staley retired and they brought in Trent Williams, which might have been a question why they didn't do more on the offensive line. Well, that's why. It wasn't a sexy draft. I don't think they're going to be beloved as I look into the draft grades, as they probably shouldn't. Yeah, they're actually almost dead middle with a 2.95 grade here, because I think there are some people out there that stand like me, Bogman, that you can look at the Niners and you could be like, well, it's nice, it's riches, they did what they did, but they also passed up some serious talent. And, you know, passing up Jeudy, I think, is an automatic negative. But Kinlaw and Ayuk, it's hard to do much worse, you know, or much better
just think
coming
of the
out
weekend
of a first round
too. you know, think of the full weekend with getting Trent Williams as well and him not costing nearly as much as everyone else expected. I mean, I love Kinlaw, and I think Aiyuk is – they got three starters this weekend, which is, you know, a lot. Either if you get three starters out of a combine weekend or out of a draft weekend, you're either doing things right or your team blows, yeah. You know. So I think they're doing things right. Kinlaw to replace Buckner, Aiyuk to be a field stretcher, and Trent Williams to replace Staley. I think they had a great weekend. The draft was okay. It's always going to be tough to grade out high when you only have five picks, though, but I thought they did a great job.
What do you think the over-under is set on the Niners?
11.5.
Ooh. -110 both ways, 10.5. You were very close. So
okay.
You're going to take that? You're going to punch that over with the Niners?
I'll punch that over for sure.
Yeah, I think you got to punch that over. I mean, they didn't lose enough to slap them on the wrist. And they immediately replaced the things that they did lose. You know, getting rid of Buckner, they were able to keep Eric Armstead, and then Kinlaw just jumps in and replaces them. They still have Bosa. They've got a healthy Kwon Alexander coming back this year. And I also forgot they traded Matt Breida to the Miami Dolphins, but they've got a glut of running backs as Jerick McKinnon comes back. So it's hard to punch the under, but, you know, it can be done. And last team up here is the Seattle Seahawks. Seahawks brought in Philip Dorsett, Jacob Hollister, I believe got the tender and re-signed it, but they brought in Greg Olsen. That was kind of their big one. A couple defensive moves, nothing too crazy on the Seahawks side. Primary need was edge rusher. They need some offensive line help. Really anything on the defense is where they wanted to go, and I think wide receiver was more of a prominent need, unfortunately, than they attacked. They took Jordan Brooks out of Texas Tech with a first-round pick, linebacker Daryl Taylor, edge rusher out of Tennessee, went some offensive line help. A little bit later, they took some offensive help in DJ Dallas, running back out of Miami in the fourth, and then Freddie Swain, wide receiver out of Florida in the sixth. But they really didn't do much on the offensive side outside of linemen. This was heavy defense. So what do you think about what the Seahawks did?
Yeah, you know, Jordan Brooks is a weird one because the dude was, I don't know. He's kind of a great, great, gap shooter. Like, he's going to put a pressure on the quarterback and stuff, but he's not great in coverage, which is weird for a hybrid-y linebacker type of guy like Jordan Brooks. But this is what the Seahawks do. They always take a guy in the first round, like when they took Penny, and you go, what are they doing? Daryl Taylor was very appropriate. They have to get that edge. You got to keep Russell Wilson upright with Damian Lewis. I think Parkinson is going to fit there for a while. I really like that pick specifically for Seattle. And I'm a big DJ Dallas fan and a big Allen Robinson fan. Their other two fourth round picks. So I think in the fourth round, they really did great. Lots of questions about that first pick. So I know they graded out fairly low. But this is a team that you don't want to grade low because, you know, Pete Carroll makes them work. And then we're talking about the Russell Wilson draft years later when someone gave him a bad grade.
So. Third lowest, 2.18. Lowest, and they range from D to B. Real quickly, what do you think they're set on the win totals this year?
Nine for Seattle.
Where the hell are they? I don't understand why this doesn't sort it sometimes. Oh, there they are. What'd you say?
Nine.
Nailed it. Nailed it again. Good Lord, man. -110 both ways, over, under. So which side do you take?
Over. I still think they're good. So.
I think it's close to a push. Well, guess what? We are done on this with me, but we're not done completely with this because Bogman is going to be joined by Bubba. You guys are going to finish up the NFC. That will be donezo, finished in the books. So, friendos, I am out of here, but Bogman and Bubba coming up in the third hour. So don't you go anywhere. More In This League right around the corner on Sports Grid.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.